The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Good morning. It is time to get up with Sensational Steph, single-handedly saving the season. His latest masterpiece is right off the top. Then, trade day now behind us. It's decision time for all the NFL teams who need quarterbacks once and for all. Who are they going to take? Plus, they need to put the D back in Big D. But there is one thing that could change everything for the Cowboys. We'll tell you what that is as we get up with you starting right now on a Tuesday. I'm Greeny in New York. Delighted you've chosen to get up with us, and we have put together a crew to talk football with you today and more. We're 9 days away from the NFL draft, and look who is here. Field Yates, who I believe is running for mayor of Vail, Colorado. Mike Tannenbaum, who is going to trade up for a quarterback by the end of today's program. And Dan Orlovsky is going to hit a few drives straight down the middle of the fairway. They're on their way, but we begin with the performance of the night. Oh, Steph Curry has been on fire, and it would continue last night in Philly, being guarded by his brother, closing seconds of the first, knocking down a three. That's a sign of things to come. Steph had 29 through three. And then in the fourth quarter, he just took over. Watch Steph Curry around the screen. That's going to be a theme. That's his 6-3. That would tie the game at 86. Warriors down two now. Curry, again, using the screen. That's his 7-3 of the night. Warriors up by one. Later, the lead is one. It's Steph again. It's the same play around the screen. His brother can't get there. That's 8 threes. Warriors pulling away. 2 minutes left. Warriors by six. You're not going to believe it. It's Steph again. That's his 9th. Warriors up by 9. And then just for good measure, how about breaking it into double digits? Just over a minute to go. The lead is 6. That's his 10th three of the night. 49 points for Steph Curry, his 11th straight game with at least 30. You can't spell Steph without MVP.
This streak, I'm obviously aware, but it's you don't put too much pressure on yourself. You just play basketball. I've just settled into just having fun, kind of letting the game come to you. And I'm having a blast out there just playing basketball. And it's obviously working.
You guys ask me after every game what I think of Steph and his performance, and it's whatever I said last game, just use that. It's just utter amazement at this guy's skill level, heart, mind, focus. It's just amazing to watch.
Well, it's a two-time MVP, but he's never played better than he's playing right now. Since last Monday, Steph has 4 games with 10 threes. That stretch alone would give him the 3rd most such games all time. That's since last Monday. He's also the first player ever to average 40 points, 50% from the floor, 40% on threes, and 90% from the line over an 11-game stretch. And after the explosion last night, he has overtaken Bradley Beal for the scoring title this season. He's now averaging 31.4 points a game. He has also moved up his odds in the MVP running. This was last night during the game. Caesars Sportsbook by William Hill moved his odds from 50-1 to 20-1 as a result of last night's game alone. And so here is Tim Legler and Legs. And we were talking before the show came on about just what this stretch has meant for the sport, for the league, at a time when they so desperately need it. What do you think about the idea that Steph has entered the MVP conversation?
Oh, yeah, he should have been in it all along. But I think what he's doing right now obviously has thrust him into the conversation because they're also winning games. And in the NBA, it's a little bit different. You know, it's not like baseball where you can win an MVP in a last place team. I believe A-Rod did that. It doesn't work that way in the NBA typically. You've got to have a team that's winning, a team that's a solid playoff team. And they're starting to win again. And he's doing it at the right time. All this momentum as we head down the stretch. This is a guy now that at 33 years old is giving us something that we never thought we'd see, which is him at his very best. Imagine capturing for a moment in time an all-time great when he's at his absolute best. It's hard to find that sometimes and remember what that is for all-time greats. We're seeing it right before our eyes. So absolutely, he belongs in the conversation. And more importantly for me, Greeny, what you just said, he may have salvaged the NBA regular season because it has been a very difficult stretch with all of these guys missing games, marquee matchups that don't really come to fruition. He has now created so much interest with what he is doing and so much electricity that he is really single-handedly saving the regular season for the NBA and giving us a great prelude for what the playoffs could look like.
I agree completely. He plays with such a joy that it is contagious and delightful to watch. Again, he has six games with at least 10 threes this season. No other player has more than five in their career. So what Steph is doing is ridiculous. But you brought up initially the idea of this team not being in the play. Right now, they're not even assured of being in the playoffs. They would be in that play-in situation. What do they look like to you right now as far as a team that could do some damage if they get in the playoffs?
Well, look, they're still obviously a team that's shorthanded, and that's going to be tough. Their rotation isn't very deep. But when you have a guy this high that does this kind of destruction to what you want to do defensively and totally redefines how far out you have to extend your defense and the number of bases you need to cover and how easy that makes the game for other people. When you have a guy like this at his absolute best, Greeny, would you want to play him in a one-game situation in a play-in? I certainly wouldn't. And then even if they're able to escape that, you look at a team like Phoenix, you look at a team like Utah, the two teams at the top of the Western Conference. You want to play Steph Curry in a best of seven when he's coming in playing his absolute best basketball of his entire life? It's a dangerous proposition. What this guy is doing right now to defenses, it's almost impossible to ask that much of your bigs to be that far out on the floor that often to contain this guy. And that's what he is doing right now. And he's certainly making that those early games, the play-in games, certainly, and then maybe even a best of seven with a team like Utah, Phoenix in the first round, much more interesting than we ever thought it would have been.
No question. Legs, outstanding to see you. Thank you. Stay close by. We'll do more with you a little later as Steph is knocking down all the trays. And speaking of trays, let's get to Trey Lance. He had his second pro day yesterday, and among those in attendance, and this is important, were the 49ers' John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan. They have the number three pick in the draft. I want you to hear something that Dominique Foxworth said yesterday on our show, talking with some skepticism as it relates to the hype surrounding Trey Lance.
As impressive as Trey Lance's highlights are, something about those highlights give me some pause because I look at the end zone and it says Penguins. Like, he's playing against Youngstown State. Like, let's relax. Let's calm it down a little bit. He's balling against Penguins. It's hard for me to get too excited about that tape.
Well, that's what he said. Meanwhile, Dan Orlovsky on Twitter yesterday, in talking about Lance, tweeted, "You don't draft on production, you draft on projection." So a couple of different ways to look at this very intriguing prospect. Let's look at him a little more closely. Field and Mike T. And Dan, I'll start with you. It's usually Ryan Clark I ask to do this, but explain that tweet.
Well, Greeny, quarterback production is a completely dependent result, especially in college football. Okay, like, what was your play caller like? How did your receivers play? How good was the offensive line? Like, I know a lot, I've seen a lot of quarterbacks in college football that at the end of the day, they played a top 10 defense and they threw for 380 yards and 70% completion percentage. So their production was incredible. Well, eight of those throws were screens behind the line of scrimmage that receivers took into 120 yards after the catch, right? So the quarterback production thing is such an overblown thing. I would say this, everybody at home, go on your computer right now and type in all-time college passing leaders. You're not going to find a name until you get to like 20 that's had a really good NFL career. Do it with touchdowns. You won't find a name till like 30 that's had a good NFL career. Projection is completely individualized. What are you as a player? What is your skill set and your traits and your talents? What are they now and what could they potentially be in 5 years? I don't really care what you did versus a certain team. Projection over production.
That's a really fascinating one, and I haven't heard it framed with those specific words, but it really is a good way to look at it. Mike T, as one who has made these picks, projection versus production, how do you see it?
There is a time and place for projection, but not what San Francisco just did, trading two first-round picks and a third. One of the biggest mistakes I made in my career was drafting Vernon Golston with the sixth pick. It was a projection. He played with his hand down. We were transitioning to 3-4. It was a bad decision with a bad process. We should have done that in the second or third round. You could live to fight another day. I can't imagine that Kyle Shanahan would trade up 2 ones and a third not to know who they're going to take. And when you see them flying around the country, going to Ohio State last week with Justin Fields, being in North Dakota yesterday, what that says to me and what I am hearing around the league is they are not unanimous in who they want to pick, meaning John Lynch, Adam Peters, and Kyle Shanahan. And at the Jets, we had a sign in our draft room, "In God we trust, for everyone else we need data." And I think what they're doing is they're checking those last box in terms of being very thorough.
I kind of like that. All right, so Yates, and you sit there and you are talking to absolutely everybody. Give me the way you see it, because we're done now. I mean, the process, for the most part, is done. Fields had a second pro day. Lance had a second pro day. Mac Jones had two pro days. Where are we right now, 9 days from the draft, as far as where these quarterbacks should be expecting to go?
Yeah, so Greeny, everybody has an opinion on every other team during the pre-draft process, right? So you want to know about what the 49ers' plans are? You can ask 31 other teams, because the 49ers, lips sealed. Everybody else, they've got a thought. And I will just say this, despite the fact that there's been some suggestions recently and some visits by the 49ers to both Justin Fields and Trey Lance's second pro days, that almost every person that I talk to around the NFL believes the 49ers are still going to be taking Mac Jones third overall. And I don't know if this is because we've had too much time to think about the pick, that we've talked ourselves into changing our minds, but I do believe that Mac Jones remains the favorite for the 49ers. And while Trey Lance and Justin Fields may not go number three, I still think the four for those two quarterbacks is pick nine. Whether that's the Broncos or somebody moving up, I don't think any of these five quarterbacks slides out of the top 10.
All right, so that again would be the fastest that we've ever seen it happen. If four of them go off the board with the first four picks, that would be unprecedented. So no one is falling in these scenarios. So we have to be very careful with how we frame this. But to be the fifth quarterback in a five quarterback draft is not something that these guys, I think, would be excited about. One way or another, we are just getting rolling as we continue. You know what the Cowboys need, right? They need help on defense. But could they shock everyone and draft another playmaker? Stephen Jones has addressed it. He answers that question. You'll hear it coming up next. Plus, Bill Belichick is the king of the draft day trade. Does he have something up his sleeve? And does he have to move up to do it? You'll hear the answer next. You're watching Get Up on ESPN.
Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Get Up is brought to you by National Geographic's Earth Day Eve celebration. Stream tomorrow on Nat Geo's YouTube at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. All right, let's go through some NFL win totals from Caesars. Yates, I'm starting with you. Tampa Bay, more or less than 11.5 wins. What do you think?
I'm going more, Greeny. Obviously, the 17th game helps their cause, but so too does the fact that this team conceded. It wasn't really playing great football until the final 5 games of last regular season. They brought back basically the entirety of the roster. And I know that sometimes you get nervous about a team defending its Super Bowl title and being the hunted. Two words, Tom Brady. They'll be just fine.
Tannenbaum, you are next. Patriots, more or less than 9 wins.
More. This is easy, Greeny. They won 7 last year. We could talk about what they've done in the offseason. What we haven't talked about are the opt-outs coming back. How about Dante Hightower? This was a team that struggled in the red zone on defense, struggled on third down. I think they're going to be way above 9, competing for the AFC East title.
Okay, that's an interesting one. We'll get to them a little later. But Orlovsky, you're next. Cowboys, 9.5 wins, more or less.
All right, Tad Prescott, I'm going to say more. Mainly because, one, I got to imagine Dak Prescott is worth 3 wins. And then the 17th game gives them another opportunity to win another game. That being said, if they're going to get above 9.5, Dak will have to play better than he did in those first halves of the first 4 games. I'll say the Cowboys get over 9.5.
Okay, we will see. In the meantime, what they really need is better defense. And we'll see. Last year, they were just historically awful. They allowed the second most rush yards and the most passing touchdowns in franchise history. Stephen Jones runs the show there. He had this to say yesterday on 105.3 The Fan.
Certainly, that's one of the goals in this draft is to improve defensively. And then, as you said, if the right guy presents himself, not unlike CD did last year, sometimes you just got to be in a situation where if he's by far the best player left on the board, then you've got to have confidence that you can make that selection.
What he's talking about is how the plan last year was to go defense, and then CD Lamb dropped to them when they weren't expecting it, and they grabbed him. So the question to you, Dan Orlovsky, is if they're going to go over, if the Cowboys are going to be a playoff team this year, what do they have to do with that 10th pick in the draft?
They have to take a defensive lineman. It's their biggest need. It's built their biggest need two-way, both skill-wise, they don't have enough good players there, and scheme-wise. Now, the conundrum for Dallas is there's probably not a player at the defensive line at number 10 worthy of that pick. And that's why the Cowboys are kind of in a tough spot. They need defensive line help. There's just not a player worthy of being selected there at 10. So you can sit there and say, we'll take one of those corners. Patrick Surtain out of Alabama, J.C. Horn from South Carolina. Likely going to be really good players. But Dan Quinn is coming from over from Atlanta, the ex-head coach, as their defensive coordinator. He is going to run predominantly that cover three defense that was notorious in Seattle. Well, the Legion of Boom partly became the Legion of Boom because the defensive line in Seattle, Cliff Avril and Michael Bennett, they had such good, think of the San Francisco 49ers 2 years ago. That secondary played so well because of the addition of a guy like Nick Bosa. And so Dallas needs to fix their front four before they can ever think of allowing that secondary to play better than they did last year.
Right. To your point, at 10, probably isn't the spot to do that in this draft. So, Mike Tannenbaum, I'm giving you that pick. With the players who are realistically likely to be available to the Cowboys at 10, who are you taking?
I'm taking Patrick Surtain. This is the easiest decision of the draft, and I see it a little bit differently than Dan. And Dan, as a former quarterback, you know this. If you don't have enough corners, you are sent home immediately. They're going to pick you apart. Patrick Surtain opposite Trayvon Diggs, you got a real chance. He has prototypical height, weight, speed. He has production. He has great character. And he is an ideal fit. He's a plug-and-play player. He reminds me a little bit of Darrell Revis. I think it's a no-brainer. He's a 10-year starter. Just turn the card in.
How about you, Field? If we look at the players there, again, Cowboys at number 10, who are you taking?
Yeah, so I was going to offer up Patrick Surtain the second as well. For a lot of the reasons that Mike just highlighted, J.C. Horn from South Carolina unquestionably in that mix as well. Now, I will say this, Surtain, who you see here, has the pedigree, obviously was tested in the SEC, has won a lot of games, been a part of big moments. That could help Dallas. If they do want defensive front four help, and I know that Dan was likely referencing edge players, but Christian Barmore from Alabama, to me, should absolutely be in the conversation for one of the top 10 to 12 selections in this year's draft. He's a freak. He's a force. It's a different angle of pass rush up the middle, but I love that player. I think if they go with Barmore 10th, I'm sitting there saying, job well done, Dallas.
That's an interesting one. He was the defensive MVP of the championship game. Came on, he had 8 sacks last year as a defensive tackle, but 10 overall would be, Dan, would that be high?
I loved watching Barmore calling Alabama games last year. I mean, especially as an interior pass rusher. I could just tell you this. The number one thing quarterbacks hate the most when it comes to defensive line play is somebody that's going to rush us in our face, that's athletic enough to push that pocket. I think Barmore has the ability to do that. I saw him do it at Alabama. And going back to the corners, listen, you can have good corners all you want. If you're going to play cover three against me and you don't got a pass rush, we'll rip you apart. We will absolutely gut you. So Patrick Surtain's going to be really good, and J.C. Horn's going to be really good, and Trayvon Diggs has got a chance to be really good. If the Cowboys don't get a pass rush and they're going to play cover three, they're going to get gutted by good quarterbacks.
Interesting note. We got Surtain and Horn, both of them had dads who played in the NFL, Patrick Surtain and Joe Horn, the longtime receiver, 4-time Pro Bowler. All right, so we've got that. Then I want you to hear something that was said yesterday by Tyrann Mathieu. So it's been nearly 3 months since the Bucs beat the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. And Tyrann Mathieu was talking about watching the tape of that loss and how it will impact his team moving forward. Listen to what he said.
I probably watched it maybe 4 or 5 times. I mean, every time I watch it, it kind of hurts a little bit more. For me, it's all about staying on top of my guys. You know, I think losses like that can kind of derail certain teams. I think for us, if we're able to kind of put it behind us but learn from it, I think it'll be one of those games that kind of build us going forward.
So it's just fascinating, I think, the dynamics here of the sell. You know, you got the image of Tom Brady throwing the trophy and you got Tyrann Mathieu sort of stewing in his house watching that in a dark room angry. So here's the question, okay? If I told you right now, because both those teams feel like significant favorites in their conferences, that only one of the two teams was in the Super Bowl last year is going to make it this year, the Bucs or the Chiefs, who are we taking? Dan, I'll start with you. Kansas City or Tampa, who's making it back?
I'm taking the Chiefs. A lot of reasons, but one of the reasons is what I just heard from Tyrann Mathieu. I mean, we all correlate leadership to the quarterback position. How about the leadership that we just heard from the Honey Badger, talking about like he's taking it upon himself to stay on top of guys, that they lost that game and he wants them to realize it's not okay, but it's not the end of the world, right? Like they kind of lost that Super Bowl, but they didn't lose because of like this glaring weakness because of the injury. So because they still have Patrick Mahomes and they're regrouped on the offensive line and the leadership that it sounds like they have in that locker room, I'm taking the Chiefs.
Mike T.
Tampa Bay, what was the difference in the game? The weak offensive line of the Kansas City Chiefs. They've added Joe Tooney, Kyle Long, but those two tackles, Eric Fisher, Mitchell Schwartz, have not been replaced. Until those tackles are solidified, I don't care if they have the U.S. Olympic track team on the outside, which they do, by the way, between Hardman and Hill. But if they can't protect Patrick Mahomes, it doesn't matter.
Let's see if they're able to address that need for tackle in the draft. Field Yates, who you got, Chiefs or Bucks?
Yeah, I'll go with the Chiefs to piggyback on what Dan said. Love the leadership and the intangibles involved. And while I can make the case that the AFC's collective quarterback outlook has a brighter future for the next 5 to 10 years, I believe the NFC right now is better positioned with quarterbacks. You've got obviously Tom Brady, who we're talking about, but Aaron Rodgers and Matthew Stafford and Russell Wilson, elite quarterbacks that the Bucs are going to have to work their way through in the playoffs. I think their path is slightly more difficult. So give me the Chiefs. I'm betting on Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid bouncing back in a major way next season.
And fair enough. And very quickly, I'll take the Buccaneers for two reasons, Tom and Brady. I'm done picking against him. I'm not doing it again until he retires. All right, we'll take a quick break. As we continue here on Get Up, do the Patriots need to draft Cam Newton's replacement right now? Who should Bill target? That's the question. We've got the answer. Next, Get Up on ESPN.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than one rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code Parlay and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code Parlay. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
We're back on Get Up with your wake-up call, courtesy of Steph Curry and Mike Breen.
Steph launches a three and hits it at the buzzer. Curry, another three. Bang! Steph Curry does it again. Curry drives, pulls back, puts up a three. Bang! 9 3-pointers make it now. 10 for 17 from downtown for Steph Curry.
It was just unbelievable last night. We opened the show talking about Steph for MVP. It was the sixth time this year he's made at least 10 threes. He ties the record he himself set for most such games in a single season in NBA history. Steph Curry is on fire. Other good games in the NBA last night. Thrillers that went right down to the finish. We got Giannis and the Bucks taking on the Suns. 31 seconds left. Phoenix down a deuce. Devin Booker looking for the equalizer. Working on Chris Middleton. And he's got it. We go to overtime tied at 116. Early in the OT. It's Booker again. Want you to keep a close eye on Giannis coming over for help defense. He does, but watch him as he comes up the floor. He is clearly hobbling, and out he would go, and he would not return. Does not appear serious. Looks like it was a case of cramps. Does not appear it's anything to be concerned about. Meanwhile, how the game would turn out. 26 seconds left. Bucks down three. Bang! That's Middleton. The catch and shoot, and we're tied at 127. 6 seconds left. Booker looking for space. Working on Jrue Holiday. Working it to the corner. It's no good, but wait. You're not going to believe it. They called a foul. This is a foul on P.J. Tucker. Rushing the elbow of Booker, who makes a foul shot, and that's how it ends. 128-127, Phoenix on that call. Meanwhile, Peyton Manning in the house as the Grizzlies played the Nuggets. Another good one that started in overtime. Less than 20 seconds left. Nuggets down three. Will Barton knocks down the three. We're tied at 125. 5 seconds left. Grizzlies a chance to win. Ja Morant into the lane. It's up. No. Yes. No. No good. We're going to double overtime. Under a minute to go in the second OT. Grizzlies down two. How about Ja again? He had 36 points, 12 assists. Look at him finding space. Left hand and it's good. Tied at 134. But it would be on this night, one that belonged to the Joker. Nikola Jokic. Not yoking around. 47 points. 15 boards, Nuggets take it, 139-137 in double overtime. And what an ESPN lineup we have for you this weekend. Saturday afternoon, Sixers, Bucks. Saturday night, UFC 261 on pay-per-view, three titles on the line. Sunday afternoon, Nets host the Suns. Sunday night baseball, Padres and Dodgers. What a lineup this weekend on the family of networks. Speaking of which, right now on ESPN Plus, you can find brand new Mel and McShay with a three-round mock draft where they play the role of general manager for all 32 teams and take turns making the picks. And we'll run through this for you a bit here. Mel was up first. He for Jacksonville took Trevor Lawrence. Todd took Zach Wilson. No surprises. That's when it gets interesting. With the third pick, Mel took Justin Fields for the 49ers. Again, this is based on what they would do. There was one projected trade in this. Kuiper made it with himself moving the Patriots from 15 to 7 in a trade with the Lions to take Mac Jones. Mel also went quarterback at number 9, giving Trey Lance to the Broncos, believing he has a higher ceiling than Drew Locke. So that would be where the quarterbacks would go, again, as far as this mock exercise that Mel and McShay put together. And this is what the top 10 winds up looking like the way it went. You see a Cincinnati in there taking the offensive tackle for Burrow. But all eyes, of course, are on the quarterbacks, and you see where they would go as far as this is concerned. And there's New England moving up to 7 in a previous mock draft. Mel Kiper had New England moving up to 10. So the questions are rich about the Patriots and quarterbacks. So Orlovsky, I'm just going to start with the most basic question I can. What exactly, in your opinion, do the Patriots need to do about quarterback in the next 2 weeks?
Even the playing field within their division. Their division's got Josh Allen, Tua Tagovailoa, and likely Zach Wilson. That's just in their division. Forget the conference that has Patrick Mahomes and Justin Herbert and Lamar Jackson and Trevor Lawrence, right? And so I think that they've been abnormally aggressive in free agency, and I expect them to try to be abnormally aggressive in the draft. Now, the question for me, because it's a great unknown with New England, is one, are they going to take a quarterback? And then two, what style of quarterback is it going to be? Because there is the reality that we have Justin Fields and Trey Lance in a certain style of quarterback grouping where those players are going to do more with above the X's and O's. Those guys are going to take a play call, and if it's not there, they have the talent and potential to do more with that play, to win that type of rep, where Mac Jones is going to consistently execute that play call at a relatively high level, right? And so do the Patriots and Josh McDaniels want to go back to what they did for 20 years or so with Tom Brady, which is running that offense and just having a guy just be dialed in with his execution on a consistent basis, not give you much more than that? Or do they want to do with a little bit what they flirted with Cam Newton last year, with the athleticism being able to do more with just the X's and O play call? At the end of the day, I think Josh McDaniels has a huge decision for New England.
All right, so Yates, let me come to you on this question. If Justin Fields does go 3, which is what they projected there, it is not what is widely expected, but if that were to leave Mac Jones and Trey Lance on the board, if you are Bill Belichick, which one are you going up to get?
I'm trading up for Trey Lance. I just see a significantly higher ceiling for this player. And Dan's correct that Mac Jones fits the confines of what the Patriots have had under center for 20 of the past 21 years, obviously last year being the exception. But you have to look at the direction in which the NFL is evolving right now. You had 8 quarterbacks rush for over 400 yards last season. The Patriots, within their own division, saw Josh Allen make major strides last year. And yes, he's a gifted thrower. But where he can really torture you is on second reaction plays. Even if his initial read is not there, or if there is pressure in the pocket, Josh Allen might run towards the sideline like he's getting ready to run out of bounds, and the next thing you know, launch a football 24 yards down the field to Stephon Diggs. The game is changing. Trey Lance offers you ability to keep up with how the game is changing.
So, Mike T, you know Belichick well, and again, we're projecting him to do something here that he has literally never done before. Would you explain that and then explain what you expect him to do?
Sure. In the 5 years that he ran the Cleveland Brown drafts and the 20-plus years in New England, he's never taken a quarterback in the first round. He's taken one in the second round, Jimmy Garoppolo. But when you start the offseason as aggressively as they have, spending all that money, it's impossible for me to think that they're not going to complete the deal and not go up and get a quarterback. And I understand what Field and Dan just said, but I think we're overcomplicating it.
Yeah.
And maybe because I was on the losing end of so many of those games for 20 years. But if it was good for 20 years, go get Mac Jones. He's incredibly accurate. He's smart. He's the closest to Tom Brady. Go run it back with Mac Jones for a long time.
That has been one of the things we projected for quite some time. Go ahead, Danny. Real quick final thought. Go.
Yeah, I just think it's important for us not to lose sight of this. Quarterbacking in the NFL always has been and always will be about who do you have to throw the football to, when should you throw the football to them, and where does the football need to get thrown precisely. At the end of the day, that will always win out at the quarterback spot. And right now, Mac Jones does that, the best out of that group of three. Trey Lance, Justin Fields, and Mac Jones. Mac Jones does that the best out of that group.
Let's see if that's the decision that Belichick winds up making. Stay close, guys. Much more football as we go. But let me run the bases through yesterday in the majors, and it starts with Dylan Moore thwarting a Dodgers rally with a terrific defensive play in the seventh. Right there. Mariners beat L.A. 4-3. That's two straight losses for the Dodgers. 4 on the season. They still have the best record in baseball at 13-4. Elsewhere in Washington, Paul DeJong hit 2 home runs, including a grand slam, as the Cardinals beat the Nats 12-5. Cards finished with 5 home runs on the night, including back-to-back jacks from Tommy Edman and Paul Goldschmidt. Elsewhere, Shohei Ohtani returns to the mound tonight for the Angels, his first start in more than 2 weeks. He threw 92 pitches on April 4th, developed a blister. He hasn't pitched since. He'll be on a 75-pitch count for tonight's game. Meanwhile, tonight, we've got the Mets and the Cubs playing game 1 of a 3-game set, 7:40 Eastern. Taiwan Walker getting the start for the Mets. Jake Arrieta for Chicago. You'll see all the action tonight on ESPN and on the ESPN app. Coming up, Lamar Jackson doesn't have good enough weapons, or does he? John Harbaugh and his general manager respond to criticism they find insulting. You'll hear it. Plus, last year the Packers shocked the NFL with their draft. Which team will shock us with a surprising quarterback this time around? We'll make our picks. And then we got a little sneaky, Hembo, and this one is for Yates. Who was the only player in Ravens history to catch 100 passes in a season? That's the question. The answer's next. Let's get up on ESPN.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use the code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use the code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
We are back on Get Up, and all right, Yates, the pressure is on you, and for what it's worth, everyone in the studio, including me, got this wrong. Who was the only player in Ravens history to catch 100 passes in a season?
I'm surprised you all got it wrong, Greeny. Hembo is very good at this. This is a layup. It's Derek Mason. Everybody remembers the great run he had with the Baltimore Ravens. And if I'm wrong and I'm speaking this confidently, I'm going to feel like a real fool. But I remember some dominant seasons from Derek Mason, who had the opportunity to join on his radio show in Nashville in his post-playing career. So I'm assuming I'm right. But if I'm not,
yes, you're right. Not only are you right, but continuing to talk about it while it's on the screen kind of feels like rubbing it in, to be completely honest with you. But you are indeed correct. It was Derek Mason in 2007. You're smart and the rest of us are dumb. Meanwhile, speaking of the Ravens, Lamar Jackson took what can only be described as a step back last year after being the MVP the year before. And part of that was due to a lack of contribution from his receiving core. Now, Baltimore has the 27th pick in the draft. Mel Kiper in his latest mock has them taking LSU receiver Terrace Marshall. And last year, here's some more numbers. Baltimore's receiving core dead last in yards, near the bottom in yards after the catch, in the bottom half of the league in yards per reception, outside the top 10 in touchdowns. Their general manager and coach talked about it yesterday.
We've got some really good young receivers. It's insulting to these guys when they hear that we don't have any receivers. It's quite insulting. I'm insulted by it too, to be honest. So I think we've got some guys that want to show everybody what they can do.
We'll stand by our guys. You know, I'm not about to apologize for our guys. Our guys are going to go out there and win football games for us, and they're going to make plays, and they're going to show people. You know, can't wait to see it happen.
Dan, they're insulted.
What's your reaction? I'm insulted. I'm insulted that they're insulted because the reality is the tape says that I'm right. I think at the end of the day, you guys just talked about the numbers last year. In the last 2 years, in the last two seasons, the Baltimore Ravens wide receivers are last in catches and yards. That's with your quarterback winning MVP in one of those seasons. That's really hard to do. And your tight end, Mark Andrews, his production hasn't slipped. So it's not the quarterback, Eric DaCosta. So the tape is what it is. Number two, you offered Juju Smith-Schuster a $12 million a year deal. So you have the same feelings as we do, or that I do, is that the upgrade at wide receiver position is necessary. And the last thing is, I don't know if there's a receiver group that's got it easier than the Ravens. Everybody on defense is down near the line of scrimmage paying attention to the run. You don't have to beat double coverage like receivers have to do in the NFL. It's often one-on-one. So I'm insulted that you think the tape says your receivers are good enough when the tape says they're not, and also you by offering Juju his contract.
Yeah, I get it. And I agree with what you're saying. The two things on the other side, one of them is what they do offensively does not lend itself to receivers putting up big numbers. That said, the tape is what the tape is. The second piece of this, Mike T, is a sort of general manager speak, right? I mean, what is it you're hearing as you hear Eric DaCosta so defiantly making those comments?
Yeah, that was a great job by Eric DaCosta. This is GM 101. His audience is his locker room. He's sticking up for his guys. They may draft three wide receivers, but he has to talk to his locker room. And what he's saying is, fellas, I believe in you. Keep doing what you're doing. And we got to make our best decisions at the appropriate time. But I loved it yesterday. And I wouldn't be surprised if they drafted multiple receivers this year.
That's right. I mean, that's exactly right. What's he going to do? Sit up there and say, you know what? Our guys stink. And we need to do a lot. We got a lot of work to do at that. But that's just not one of the things that might happen. So what we're going to do is we're going to make the pick for them. Yates, I'm starting with you. The Ravens pick 27th in the first round. They need a receiver. Who should they take?
Yeah, let's look for some size here, Green. You go to Terrace Marshall Jr., the other LSU wide receiver. He had 13 touchdown catches back in 2019. Good enough for third on his own roster. He's a height, weight, speed freak. Had a solid year this past year. Not a dominant season, but a guy who I think, just based off of the measurables, team's view is a late first or early second round talent.
Yes. Again, we're taking out of the equation those first three. Mike T, who you got?
I'm taking Kadarius Toney, University of Florida. He's played in 38 games, a rare player with a lot of experience. He's a little bit shorter, but he's explosive. You can move him around. He's smart. He dominated at the Senior Bowl. He's a great fit for this offense because of his versatility. He'll make them harder to defend.
At 70 catches last year. Orlovsky, who you taking?
Yeah, give me Rashad Bateman from Minnesota. I think, number one, the size that Field was referencing is huge. He's a 6'1", 6'2" player. I think his ability to make some contested catches on the outside, something the Ravens' pass game offense is going to be needed. He reminds me of a guy that could be like Allen Robinson. You know, thicker frame, a little bit of a bigger body, but those big contested catches, that's what this pass game needs. They don't need another small slot receiver that's going to make something happen in space. They need a guy on the outside that I can go to and go, hey, go win, please. Go beat a corner one-on-one, and let's have our quarterback throw for a completion.
Okay, so we'll make it clear. Once again, we took out of this conversation Ja'Marr Chase and Devontae Smith and Jalen Waddle and Kyle Pitts because none of them realistically have any chance of being there by the time we get to 27. So they need a receiver. Now let's talk about teams who need quarterbacks. So we all remember the big stunner of last year's draft, the Packers shocking the world when they traded up late in the first round to take quarterback Jordan Love. So as we look ahead to next week, let's try and identify the team that is going to surprise us all by taking a quarterback in the first 50 picks. When we are all together on Friday morning, or maybe this will leak into the following weekend if it is in round two, Dan Orlovsky, I will start with you. Which team and which quarterback are we expecting to be the big surprise?
Yeah, I could see the Minnesota Vikings shocking us and finding a way to get a quarterback relatively early in this draft. They got the 14th pick. Now, they don't have a second rounder, but they have 2 third-rounders and 4 fourth-rounders. So they either take a guy at 14 that slips. Let's say Justin Fields or Trey Lance slips, and they go, the physical talent, we just can't pass on. We're going to pounce on him. Or somebody slips, and they try to go up into the second round and go get a guy early on. Kirk Cousins is only under contract for the next 2 years. Okay, so Minnesota, new play caller, kind of need to win now but build for the future. I think they could shock us and take one of those quarterbacks, maybe Davis Mills, early in the second round. Again, if he's there sitting and maybe the 32nd pick and they package a couple picks together and they go get him to get the fifth-year option. But I think that he's a physical talent that teams look at and go, he's not played enough to be worthy of a top 15 selection. But there's some talent there that if we continue to develop it, he's going to be a big-time player at that position. Vikings, Davis Mills potentially.
If Davis Mills is not a name that you know, he's from Stanford, only started 11 games at the collegiate level. He was the number one quarterback in his recruiting class some years ago. And because of injury and COVID, he just hasn't played much. But he's got all of the measurables that we look at in all of these guys. Mike T, give me a team that's going to surprise and the quarterback they're going to take.
Right on cue, Tampa Bay Buccaneers, 32nd pick. Remember what Baltimore did a couple years ago? They got Lamar Jackson for the fifth year. Greeny, they're going to take your Davis Mills that we just talked about from Stanford. 32nd pick, it's perfect. You sit behind Tom Brady for a year or two, let Tom Brady go off into the sunset, finally, we think. And now Davis Mills has a chance to get healthy and learn from the best of all time. If I'm Tampa Bay, it's really the best thing I could do. I win for today, I brought everyone back, but I'm developing for tomorrow, and Davis Mills is the perfect high-ceiling player that Dan and you just mentioned.
Well, look, if you watch the show, you know, I've been saying for the longest time, I think Mills is the guy someone's going to trade into the back half of the first round to take. So I will just put down there the Steelers, because I think they're the team that most desperately needs a developmental quarterback. And Mike T, let me just come to you. I have leaned on you so much through email and more during this process as I'm preparing to host the draft. Would the Steelers taking him at 24 be too much of a reach? Is it just too early at 24 to take this raw player who, again, only has 11 starts at the collegiate level?
Greeny, no, because as you've mentioned, he was the number one recruit. He has a very high ceiling. And in a perfect world, from a GM perspective, if I'm Kevin Colbert, yeah, would I love to take him at 28, 29, or 30 and pick him an extra third-round pick? Of course, but if he turns out to be the successor to Ben Roethlisberger and plays well, no one's going to care if it was 24, 14, or 34. So you take him when you get him. You try to trade back, Greeny, but if you can't, turn in the card and bet on the upside.
I think Dan just fell out of his chair. Go ahead, Dan.
Because the segment is what team would shock us. Like, you guys are like the Jaguars would take a quarterback. We know that. I don't think it would be shocking if Tampa Bay took a quarterback or Pittsburgh took a quarterback. I'm talking about, like, the Packers shocked us. The Eagles, in many ways, shocked us with Jalen Hurts. So what team? I could, like, Seattle. Could Seattle shock us by taking a quarterback because of the Russell Wilson situation, finding a way to get into the second round somehow earlier in the second round for Seattle? That would be shocking. I don't think Tampa Bay or Pittsburgh taking a quarterback would blow my mind.
Fair enough. I will give you that. But I think him going as high as 24 would at least be a surprise. But your point is well taken. Okay, we'll continue in just a moment. Oh, Steph Curry was the star of the night. Did you see what he did? How's he doing this at age 33? And is he now the league MVP? I'll answer all those questions next.